It's June 16th. It's also a Tuesday, as it is always a Tuesday, unless you're on Patreon, in which case it's probably Monday afternoon. Chris is out sick. Sorry. It's not the thing.
Are we sure of that?
It's probably just the general malaise that we all feel.
It would be tragic irony if Chris had got the thing. Also, did you see we got the banner last week?
Yeah.
So it's still there. The rule is still there. We still can't say it. Or maybe just can't have it on the screen. Who knows?
Yeah.
But what can you do? And, oh, man, going to be a controversial one this week, I think. As maybe the rest of our lives are going to be controversial, right?
I had a, when I was reading these, I was like, oh, I've got the perfect order that these stories need to go in. I should write that down. And then I was like, well, I'll do that in the morning. And then I went to sleep and I just didn't care about life anymore.
Sometimes I think to myself, I should just one-tab these in advance, and I never do it. Ever.
We're going to have to build our own content management system to do this.
Well, the one we use is absolutely... The WYSIWYG is the worst thing I've ever seen in my life. Anyway, let's talk about protests a little bit.
The intersection of technology and protests before those angry comments come in.
Now, the protests... It seems like the media kind of got bored with the protests.
Yes.
I think they were still happening.
One view is they're tired of the protests. They're bored of the protests. The other is the machine would like it to go away now, so there's a moratorium on reporting. Mm. I don't know which is scarier.
But if you dig, you can find some, you know, live streams and stuff like that. Until that thing in Atlanta happened.
Yeah.
And now they're back in the news because you really can't ignore that. So, these worries... While we might have thought, well, you know, it's kind of, it's dialing down, not that big a deal. But now it's right back. And it seems like if this happens every time something like that happens, is it ever going to end?
No.
So we must be very concerned about these things. And in fact, some of the better lawmakers are asking tough questions about technology.
CNET's reporting that a senator fears that Clearview AI, which we've discussed many times before, it's the facial recognition thing, the facial recognition could be used on protesters. So he's a little late to the party. Edward Markey, asked the company if they consider a history of discrimination before they sell it to a particular police force. So if, you know, a particularly well-known police force that has got a record...
they're all pretty much in the crosshairs right now.
Do they even look at that? And the answer, I can already tell you, is no.
Now, they claim that Clearview AI is really only for after-the-fact policing. But the thing is, a lot of the police forces, and this they said this early on, maybe they've walked this back, if they're sane, they've walked this back, but they vowed to go after people based on footage.
Yeah.
And Clearview would certainly make that useful. But Clearview says, no. Our thing, it's not for riots. It's not for that kind of thing. It's literally, we did not design it for that. We don't think it would be very effective for that. But maybe what Markey didn't know.
Many police departments have software that can identify people in crowds. This is a story from BuzzFeed News. So, BriefCam, it's a facial recognition and surveillance video analysis company, sells the ability to surveil protesters and enforce social distancing without the public knowing. So, we got so many of these stories this week. I looked into it. Bad news. Any, you know, third-year computer science student with a fly-by-night operation, you can build this software now. There's so much open-source stuff and so much good face recognition, and the standards of the cameras are so good that all of the stuff that you need to do this is literally a paint-by-numbers thing on GitHub. We could build our own really amazing facial recognition thing in an afternoon using stuff from GitHub.
This one is specifically designed for compressing time in a video. So let's say that someone robs a bank and you're not sure what time it happened. I'm not sure what scenario that would be, but whatever. Maybe it's an overnight robbery of a store or something. This software claims that you just run the video and the AI will stop. And it can run through like 24 hours of video in 3 hours and be like, oh, hey, here's when something happened. And presumably, you can run that same thing through a protest and catch when any kind of weird event happens during the protest and identify the people who are.
It wasn't mentioned in this article, but this same AI, there was one really interesting use case of it, which was the aforementioned bank robbery. the software was able to look for people that walked similar to the masked robbers in the prior day's footage to look for the criminals casing the joint. And that actually seemed to result in being able to find the person. That, or I'm remembering a Law and Order TV show.
That's pretty thin,
yeah,
to use as suspicion of a crime.
Obviously, you have to do more police work. You can't just be like, this is the guy. And how the police force is actually using it is, this is the guy.
Yeah. And the protests certainly were front and center in the world psyche for the last couple of weeks. But as you say, either they had sort of smoldered a little bit, or the media just decided we didn't need to look at it anymore. But that gave us the opportunity to see that some other numbers were coming back up a little bit alarmingly. And so we must ask, well, what about those amazing programs that Apple and Google and all the governments built, right? Where are they? Why aren't they saving us?
Turns out the contact tracing apps were tech's chance to step up, but they haven't, because most states are giving the cold shoulder to the smartphone apps, according to NBC News. So the actual people that develop the applications think there's a chance that people are going to use them. But I think people are probably watching the news and really terrified of the establishment, because there's a lot of scary stuff there.
Well, and look at the stuff we've already talked about.
Yeah, I mean, using an app and it's like inviting that kind of thing on your phone. It's like, I don't know.
And trust of authority, a little low at the moment.
Would you trust Google more than like your local government?
Neither.
It seems really bad, no matter how you cut the cheese.
So, yeah, I got to say, I probably wouldn't use one of those apps.
Yeah,
unless things got a lot worse. Yeah. And I felt a lot more threatened by it.
There were, it's probably nothing to it, but, like, there was somebody that was posting and saying there's a correlation with, like, blood type, and that's probably fake news. But can you imagine if something came out, like, if there was some other, you know, pandemic or sickness or something, you know, hypothetical scenario, and it was like, okay, everybody that's got AB positive is definitely gonna die. Everybody else would be like, oh, I don't have AB positive, I'm just gonna go about my normal life. And it's like,
you jump on the phone or on Facebook or whatever, and you're like, you check around all the family, you know, it's like, oh no, we're good.
Yeah. And so it's like, no inconvenience for me. And it's like, but literally everybody that has this blood type is gonna die.
You call up your parents and you're like, what's your blood type? And everybody tells you, it's like, all right, we're good. Hey, listen, what kind of money you got stashed away? We put a down payment on a new house. The market's going to be flooded.
Yeah, I don't. And at that point, it's like, if there's any alien civil, you know, we're some great experiment and there's some alien civilization watching, it's like, you know, just kill all the sentient life. Maybe all elephants or dolphins will work out better.
Do you assume that the aliens aren't just like pure cold blooded pragmatism? Could easily be. Well, the FCC is still at work.
Speaking of lizard people.
Yeah, exactly. Cold-blooded, sure. They have, I assume they're social distancing properly in their office, but they are getting things done. Unfortunately, this thing that they're getting done is a little premature. Now, if you think back for the past how many years? The maps have been in question. The FCC says, oh, look, the maps say that everything is good. And then literally everybody else, except for the telecoms, say, the maps are wrong. I live there. I don't have internet. They're wrong. You need to fix them. And so recently they were like, maybe we'll fix the maps. But here they're saying that, you know what, before we fix the maps, you know that thing that's terribly wrong that is the basis of this whole thing? Well, before we fix that, we should do this other thing.
FCC is awarding up to $16 billion to address U.S. areas lacking broadband service. So this is the FCC. This is Ajit Pai. This is Ajit Pai's baby. He's sort of spearheading this. The thing that you're alluding to is that the basis that we would give out the $16 billion is based on those maps,
which favor big telecoms.
Yes.
Incorrectly.
Yes. It turns out that a lot of the rural areas where it's like, we've been abandoned by the major telcos, we're going to use donkeys to pull fiber optic cable through the woods, those places have it much worse. And big telecoms are just not going to service that area. And this $16 billion is not going to go to those smaller telecoms. That's a problem for rural America.
Now, when faced with hero of the internet, Jessica Rosenworcel said exactly what we're saying now. You idiots, let's fix the map first before we give away $16 billion. What are we doing here?
Ah.
Pi said, don't worry. This is not all the money. After we fix the maps, we're going to give out $4 billion.
Also, there's a wrinkle in Ajit Pai's evil plan, which is not... I think it's only maybe a sentence or two in this article, which is Elon Musk has popped up and said, hey, we can service rural broadband.
No, they count.
Elon Musk says they should count, but Ajit Pai is waffling on it. He's saying, no, he's not convinced that satellite internet...
They could be part of it.
It's according to Elon Musk. So Ajit Pai has suggested new criteria for this, which is their ping time has to be under 100 milliseconds. And that's the part that the article leaves out.
Mm.
So Elon Musk says under 100 milliseconds is no problem. But Ajit Pai has said that he's very skeptical that that could happen. But if Elon Musk can deliver under 100 milliseconds, then Elon Musk may be eligible for some of that $16 billion, because that would be a way to get, you know, internet access even in like the most rural parts of Idaho.
Isn't it crazy that like Elon, you know, I'm not a fan of Elon Musk, but Jesus Christ, he has to follow that such a strict rule, whereas the other ISPs can like data cap you and sell you service that's a quarter of the speed, and everybody's like, nah, they're, you know, they'll, ISPs will be ISPs. But
you know what the ping time is when all the kids get home from school in our neighborhoods? 500.
They should lose their funding. The other thing that the FCC is busy doing, and we reported on this once before, this is a different case, but it's going after these robocallers. And they actually levied a record fine against the last one that they caught. And it was just some crazy number. And everybody was like, wow, I just sit back like, geez, way to go, Ajit Pai. But once again, Jessica Rosenworcel points out the problem here.
FCC proposes a record $225 million fine for massive robocall campaign. The problem is going to be collecting, because all those people are gone.
And the last one, they did not collect. There she is. last defender of hope when it comes to the internet. So she pointed out, hey, you know that last major fine? We didn't get any of that money. We still don't have any of that money. So what are we doing here?
Oh, it was a limited liability company. They closed up shop and then sold all their assets for a dollar to some other limited liability company who was then fined. And then that company has now closed up. And
it was a billion calls. That's how insane is that? There's a life insurance or medical insurance.
I would believe it. You know, the auto warranty robocalls have got to stop.
You know what? That's interesting, because their data is like always at least 5 years old.
Yeah.
So they're trying to sell me warranties on cars I don't have anymore.
Yeah.
Well, when it comes to the current protests, things are happening. And I don't know if it's necessarily things that should be happening, because it isn't the government that is making concessions. It's the corporations, oddly enough, because they are desperate not to get on the wrong side of this thing. They understand, you know, the torches and pitchforks are out. So here we have kind of an interesting, this is sort of like Goldilocks and the Three Bears. Right? Three different approaches to appeasing the people. So first, we'll start with Baby Bear. The biggest reaction, I guess we'll say.
IBM will no longer offer, develop, or research facial recognition technology. IBM CEO says we should reevaluate selling the technology to law enforcement. And this is kind of big news from IBM, because they did not have a good quarter. IBM is one of those blue chip companies, I guess, that's had a dividend for like the last 40 or 50 years, which is an incredibly rare thing. And they had to lay off a ton of people to be able to meet their financials. So things are not good for Big Blue. And the fact that they're pulling out of law enforcement, which has historically been a cash cow for that type of company, maybe it's a big deal.
This is not the correct story. Because Washington Post has...
They paywalled that one.
And it always redirects you to the front page. Okay, so pretend that we're going to show you a headline. The one tab will have it, so if you get past the Washington Post paywall. But Mama Bear, in this situation, was Microsoft. Yeah. Microsoft had a little bit of a lighter touch. And we don't have the headline, but...
They're going to do like town halls and evaluate on a case-by-case basis.
And it's 1 year moratorium.
Yeah.
So. Oh, no. No, they've said no law enforcement.
At all?
That was the middle road.
Yeah, okay.
They're going to do recognition. But they're not going to sell to law enforcement.
I thought they carved out exceptions for like Office 365 to DHS and stuff like that.
They might. I think a lot of these things, when they say law enforcement, they're ignoring federal.
Oh, okay.
Which shouldn't be the case.
I did enjoy that the DEA was kicked out of New York, but that's a story for another day.
So, well, they couldn't find a technology thread there. So, yeah. So, IBM says, we're out. Microsoft says no to law enforcement. And then Papa Bear giving the least.
Amazon warehouse workers are interviewed by the New York Attorney General.
That's not the right story.
In retaliation probe. Oh, no. Amazon's like, Amazon, okay, yeah. Amazon pauses police use of its facial recognition technology for a year. So they're still going to develop it. They're still going to work with law enforcement. They're just not going to let them have direct access to it.
You think they're still going to accept data from law enforcement captures to build the database?
I think they're probably going to capture everything. Like the whole ring's like, oh, we don't retain that? No, that's going into some kind of a database for AI.
So, I guess something is happening. Some change is happening. But 1 year, that'll go by quickly.
This year has gone by quickly and slowly at the same time.
What if we're trapped in our homes for all of 2021? I just feel like it's...
They might have a vaccine later in the year. Maybe.
That's also questionable. Like, a rushed vaccine seems a little dangerous in itself.
We've Cronenberged ourselves. No.
So, the story that should have come next and has now been properly rearranged that you've already seen the headline for.
Amazon warehouse workers interviewed by New York Attorney General in retaliation probe. So the New York Attorney General is interviewing Amazon warehouse workers that spoke out and said, hey, maybe these conditions are not the safest, or hey, maybe these conditions don't follow guidelines from New York State. The studio story would be a really amazing next one, but I think that's in the business section. Because Amazon Photo Studio, they're like, this is totally essential for us to take pictures of products. And so things like that. It looks like the New York Attorney General is building a case against Amazon because Amazon has been playing it fast and loose with...
Well, if you remember, when they had those protests, the way that they fired those people is they waited for them to come to the protest, and then they fired them for not social distancing. So they were protesting the lack of safety at the Amazon warehouse, and then Amazon fired them for a safety violation. So, yeah, that's a little suspicious.
Their legal case is going to be, it's like, these employees themselves created the safety violations that they're complaining about.
They literally engineered the virus in the warehouse. Their fault.
The forklift operators are not safe because I was able to take the forklift and drive around the warehouse like a maniac.
Also, you remember... they said that the New York Attorney General requested all communication. Remember the story where the Amazon executive said that the guy was stupid in the email? That's not going to look good in court. So that'd be interesting. There might be a settlement there.
Oops.
Meanwhile, in China, I saw a story that maybe their numbers popping back up a little bit too.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they're not really wanting to talk about that. Mm.
But they had sort of overcome it, only to run into that whole Hong Kong issue.
There's an important anniversary that just happened.
Yeah, and it seems like China, more than ever, is trying to get on top of this whole, you know, like, media communication thing. It's very important to them that they maintain. But in a world that's more and more porous when it comes to that kind of thing, what do? Well, you just tighten the noose.
Apple removes two podcast apps from China's store after censorship demands. Pocket Cast says it refuses to restrict the content at the request of Chinese authorities. So, if you've ever used Pocket Cast, it's literally just an app for subscribing to podcasts.
It's just RSS.
Yeah. The objection here was you're carrying a podcast in the application that's not cool with China. And this is going to be the same theme is going to repeat in the business section and the social section on the subsequent episodes of the news this week. So, China's out in full force.
And, the other podcast company, they contact, so that Pocket understood what was going on. They contacted the other podcast company, and they're like, I don't know.
Whatever.
I don't know what we did, but we don't really care, because, you know, whatever.
Somebody's complaining about this? All right, delete it. Which is, you know, what we're used to on YouTube. It's like, we're not going to sort out anything controversial. Somebody complains about this, we're just going to delete it.
Well, you got to wonder if there's an Android version of that same app, right? It's got to be. So how long till Google does the same thing? I don't know why I put this in this section. I've kind of screwed the sort this week.
Oh, that's fine.
But hey, you know, we're barely alive. Back in, was it 2015?
It was a long time. I think maybe even before then.
We had a crazy security thing that had to do with intentional weakening of security.
It's something we've complained about on Level 1 since day one.
And based on what's currently happening with encryption, all of a sudden, somebody in Congress figured this out. You know, it took them this long, but hey, 5 years later.
Congress seeks answers on Juniper Network's breach amid encryption fraud. Who, you might ask? Why, good old Ron Wyden. Ron Wyden, you know, it's like, this is a thing. So to catch you up till now, the stuff that Ryan's talking about going back to 2014, we in the U.S. really hardcore own gold ourselves on several things. First, RSA. There's a lot of evidence, and this is something that, you know, you can't confirm this because it's probably classified, but it looks like the NSA and RSA had a deal for about $10 million where the RSA would make dual elliptic curve encryption the standard encryption in a lot of their products. The problem is that the standard for dual elliptic curve encryption was probably backdoored by carefully selected random numbers that were included in the standard. So that led to a lot of weakening of encryption. It's not, you know, totally cheesecloth, but it becomes a lot more trivial to defeat it. Same thing with the OPM hack, the Office of Personnel Management, which, you know, if you want to know who's on the payroll for the U.S. government, that would be the place to start, which is, you know, Russia and China. That's very valuable information. Juniper Networks had a hard-coded backdoor password in their equipment, and they were like, that's weird, that shouldn't be there. They patched it, but of course, you know, government offices and stuff don't patch that. And so it's theorized that this is another one of those, oops, we were supposed to sell a weakened version of this overseas, and it somehow actually ended up in our local offices. Our bad. And so a lot of this, we need a backdoor for encryption. It turns out it may have already been there for a long time. And if that's the case, Ron Wyden wants to point that out and say, hey, we've done the weakened backdoor encryption thing surreptitiously for over a decade, and look how badly that worked out, which is maybe a good thing.
So he's fighting back against the Attorney General wanting the, you know, no encryption, you have to give us a backdoor type of thing.
I'm sure that it is definitely not on Barr's radar, the whole OPM hack and the dual elliptic curve thing. He's like, hey, did you hear about the dual elliptic curve thing? He was just be like, what?
How deep do you think his, not his understanding, but his potential understanding of encryption goes?
I think he would,
pretty shallow.
He would be lost when, like, okay, you have two numbers, P and K, and then he would just, like, gone.
Thought we was doing math. We've talked a lot about the scooters and the bikes, you know, the Uber and the Bird and the Lyft, and Lyft didn't have one. What was the other one? What was the green one?
I thought Lyft bought one of the, oh, Lime. Yeah, Lime, yeah. Yeah,
maybe Lyft did buy one of them. Anyway, they're everywhere. Some people like them, some people hate them. It turns out they've become more and more popular during the lockdown because a lot of people are like, well, I don't need to drive anywhere. I'm only leaving my house once a week, and I might as well scoot around on a scooter. You know, plus, sometimes they close down the interstates and you know, the intersections, so just scoot on through that. Pretty cool, right? Except there's a little dark underside that a lot of people might not know about.
The ACLU is suing Los Angeles over its controversial scooter tracking system. MDS, or Mobility Data Specifications, is used by LADOT to track the city's electric scooters. All of them, as it turns out. The ACLU sees that as a privacy invasion because, you know, all of these have a transponder, basically, and that's what the Los Angeles Department of Transportation has. I've got some bad news for the ACLU if they look into what is going to be required for self-driving cars. It's a similar kind of transponder, just like airplanes have.
And he points out, it's anonymized, yes, but where are you scooting from in most cases? Your home. So pretty easy to de-anonymize that. Now you might be thinking, it's LA, you know, a bunch of liberal hippies. This ain't going to happen where I live.
Columbus, Chattanooga, Omaha, San Jose, Seattle, Austin, and Louisville.
Those are the big cities. And there's plenty of smaller cities, which are already. And so they're saying that the company, the MDS, is actually trying to strong arm all these cities, saying, no, you must give us this data if we operate in your city. So watch out for your scooters.
They're coming for my scooters now.
How you think the scooter, I guess they have a locking mechanism, right? So like if you haven't paid for it or whatever, I wonder if you disabled the tracking somehow, like Faraday caged wherever the thing is, would it stop the scooter?
Probably, yeah. Because remember we had that story about the rental car. They took the rental car into the forest, and then it just was like, ah.
It blue screened, essentially.
Yeah.
Yeah, so.
The programmer didn't plan on ever having, not having internet access.
That'd be funny in the apocalypse. Like, you're surrounded by transportation, but none of it works. That'd be a, if you're in a city with one of those things, it'd be a cool video to do. Figure out where the transponder is. Try to beat it. See what happens. You'd probably get arrested. Over across the pond, they are also having issues, as always, with the big tech companies. And they're actually kind of going along one of the same lines of inquiry that our government is doing. But for, well, actually, I think it is the same reason, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
The EU is going to hit Amazon with antitrust charges over treatment of third-party sellers, report says. The European Commission officially opened an investigation into the e-commerce giant last year. Listen. Amazon is super abusive if you are a third-party seller. It's totally Darth Vader. You know, I've altered the deal. Pray I don't alter it any further. You know, we have affiliate links for Amazon, and it's very much, I have altered the deal. Pray I don't alter it any further. So
Well, Amazon kind of responded and said, we're not doing X, Y, and Z. And the EU was like, okay, maybe you're not doing X, Y, and Z explicitly, but you are using this data to try and figure out what to sell. And for example, they're like, well, we don't automatically compete with our sellers. Like, we don't like look at what they did in terms of their product and immediately copy that product. But they're like, oh no, but you do use that data to figure out which areas to go into. Like fashion, for example, you're talking about that other story. How does Amazon know that they can sell fashion online? Hey, third-party sellers are making money selling fashion online. Why not jump into that, right?
Yeah.
That kind of thing. So is that antitrust? The EU is going to decide. And Zoom, this should have been in the China block. I could not have sorted these stories any worse.
I thought you were going to put this in the social story, in the social section, but that's fine. Or no, business.
You think that counts as social?
Well, maybe business. I mean,
well, China's government. I usually try to put China in government. Anyway, should have gone in the China block, but China and their control, just think back to moments ago when we talked about Apple just doing whatever China demands, and they are not alone.
This is a really good Reuters story. U.S. lawmakers ask Zoom to clarify China ties after it suspends accounts.
Now, wait, before you go into the guts of the story, we might as well go ahead and show the next headline. They said, you need to clarify. And Zoom said, all right.
Zoom confirms that Beijing asked it to suspend activists over Tiananmen Square meetings. It's funny that I can say Tiananmen Square, but not the other thing.
I don't know if you can. Do we know that for sure?
Well, we couldn't say those special characters, and then they fixed that.
Oh, that's a good representation of the...
That's a good way to do it, yeah. It's like, oh, we're defeating the algorithm. That's funny. So, this is hilarious. Like, just to boil it down, Zoom's official explanation here is, we never thought about region locking our service so that certain people in certain countries couldn't get to certain other people's Zoom accounts. So we'll work on adding that. But for now, these people who were U.S., they're in the U.S., and this is a U.S.-based thing. It's just that a lot of people in China attended this Zoom meeting. And so you're kind of, as a business, you're kind of in a rough spot because China is basically saying, we're going to block your entire service if you don't find a way to prevent Chinese citizens from joining a chat room, video chat, you know, video conference thing about Tiananmen Square. And so Zoom's like, we'll just ban these accounts. The people couldn't get a response from Zoom as to what was going on either. And nothing would have been said had it not turned into a big media thing that got blown up. And then so of course the Congress people were like, wait a minute, is this happening? And it's like, this has been like, where you act like this is something new, but American companies that want to do business in China will do this. See also YouTube. So why?
It also goes to show you, as much as Zoom has grown, they do not have the clout. that Google and Apple have, or Microsoft. Because Google and Apple do this crap constantly. Nobody bats an eye. But they're like, no, Zoom, you will not do this. Now, Zoom has said that... So they said that the Chinese government told them that it was illegal in China. But then they're like, wait a minute. It wasn't necessarily hosted in China. What's that got to do with anything? So then they backed off and they're like, we're not going to do that anymore.
Well, they are going to add region locks so that people from China can't join those in the future. But they don't have that. They don't have the technological. They didn't build their system to work like that. So they literally have to change the way their system works to see. It's like, oh, that's a Chinese IP address. It's not allowed to join the American chat room.
Which shows you what the Chinese market is worth.
Yes.
Because they're totally going to add a massive new feature that's probably going to cause a lot of headaches for, you know, like international business. But hey. Worth it.
I mean China's approach is like, this is a very divisive topic. We must not talk about this. It's not allowed. It's like, okay.
No, it's true. There's a big divide against the Chinese citizens and the Chinese government on that topic. The FCC also had some interesting news about China. And once again, how long real like that map has been wrong for at least 10 years, right?
Yes.
Probably more than that, right?
Yeah, more than that.
The FCC kind of has this reputation of just doing nothing for long amounts of time. We can't put all that on Pi because he's only been around for 4 years, but it wasn't better before him necessarily.
Yeah.
They've always been terrible. And then usually something really high profile happens, like with the map. Like somebody points out how bad they're doing, and they're like, oh, we're going to get right on that. We're going to get right on it.
The FCC has failed to monitor Chinese telecoms for almost 20 years, according to a Senate report. So this report is amazing. You should read it. There's an Ars Technica article about it. But this is like the whole Huawei thing. It's like, hey, Chinese telecoms, like they're doing business here in America, and they're selling infrastructure and communications equipment to providers that are maybe not equipped to deal with doing a security audit of it. This equipment is so complicated and has to be connected to the internet and blah, 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 that this equipment could have backdoors or intentional weaknesses or vulnerabilities or hard-coded passwords that it's not obvious to change. And you would think that the FCC would be auditing that, maybe. Because, like, you look at what the FCC in, like, the 1930s and 40s and 50s, what sort of the FCC evolved from and became. It's like you're in a residential neighborhood and, you know, somebody turns on a blender in one house and then all of a sudden everybody's over the air, radio and TV goes out. The FCC is like, okay, the blender should be shielded to prevent people's TVs and radios from going out. And so they had RF engineers and really smart people working for the FCC monitoring these things and helping test things. And you got the Underwriters Lab, which is doing, you know, the same kind of thing for safety and this sort of thing. Nobody has been doing that for 20 years for telecommunications equipment. So it ends up being made out of baling wire and duct tape. It's not hardened against criminals, and it's definitely not hardened against nation states.
They also point out, because look at everything that's going on with Huawei and how we've gone crazy. It's like, oh my God, Huawei might be connected to the Chinese government and they're operating in our country. This cannot stand. Well, these telecoms are, it's a very thin veneer. They're basically owned by the Chinese government and just doing business.
Well, not only that, it's like I've got a choice of this really amazing, you know, like Cisco piece of equipment or this piece of Chinese equipment that costs less than one third as much and does a better job. And it's like, oh, I'm going to go with the Chinese equipment. But what else is in there? We may already be too late.
Communism. Remote learning. I don't know anybody. When people have kids, I exclude them from my life. You know anybody who's dealing with a kid in remote school?
I've heard some horror stories, but
apparently not going well. And now that the school year, I guess it's over for everybody, right?
Yeah.
We're all done. We have more of a holistic view of exactly what happened.
The results are in for remote learning. It did not work, according to this article. Oh, my class. So, you know, the university shut down, and we did everything on Discord from there on out because we basically, it was just a class project. And so, like, by then, they had already learned everything that they were going to learn, and they just had to implement, you know, using the stuff. And so, mostly that was okay, but a couple students, like, in Discord, like while I was talking to students and, you know, showing links and example programs and stuff, Discord shows you what you're doing. It's like little subtext, and it was like playing Call of Duty, playing Star Wars Knights of the Old Republic, and it's like
it might have been tabbed out.
Yeah.
Although Call of Duty's online now, right? So, well, this is more about the lower grades. I think at the university level, you kind of have to expect them to have some autonomy, right? That's a more realistic. But with, like, you know, first graders, what are you going to do? So they pointed out that the technology was bad. Not all the kids. Some kids just disappeared, and no one could find them, and no one knew what was going on. They just never came back. And then they were like, well, we can't fail those kids, so what are we going to do? And they're like, well, if we don't fail those kids, we can't fail any of the other kids. And it just kept getting worse and worse. And the teachers said they didn't have time. And the parents said that they didn't have time to deal with their own kids. They were like, what? I have to deal with my kids all day?
They're expecting me to work from home. I can't work from home. And
So apparently no one likes it. And no one knows how to fix it. Congratulations. You made a terrible mistake.
VR helmets for everyone's kids. Like, just strap in and...
Sure, what's that? At least $500 a piece? Well, it's a government contract, so mark it up to $1,000, right?
You know, in a way, the strap a VR helmet onto your kid is not unlike the scene in A Clockwork Orange where they've got his eyes strapped open, and it's like, no, while you're at school, you will be wearing the VR helmet.
But... how quick would the pawn shops just be flooded with VR helmets?
Yeah.
People would hack them and, you know, get them to run
just whatever
non-educational stuff. Yeah, it'd be a mess. Moving on to security. Now, we talked about this Canadian crypto exchange back in 2018, and it was this crazy story. The guy went on vacation, and then he died. It wasn't foul play or anything. He just died. He had some kind of disease. And there was this big thing about the wife. Did she have the keys? Did the employees have the keys? Where was the money? And it was just big whodunit. Well, now we know whodunit.
Crypto exchange Cogesia was a fraud, and the founder was running a Ponzi scheme, OSC finds. So he didn't really die, or did he? We don't know.
No, he died.
Okay.
Yeah. But it turns out that before his death, he was juggling the Ponzi. So it shows, it breaks down how he lost the money. Wow. So he actually bad trades on his own exchange, got more than half of it.
Wow.
Bad trades on other exchanges. This was just his lifestyle.
Like $23 million.
They were going on crazy vacations and stuff, you know. And then this is what they got back at the end. But yeah, they confirmed it wasn't, I mean, he legitimately, he wasn't murdered or anything, but this had been going on long before his death.
There was speculation that he didn't really die. So this, I'd miss this one.
So, yeah, and they said, yeah, well, normally we would arrest him and seize the company. But since it's already in bankruptcy and we already know what they're worth, yeah, we're just done with this. Case closed. Bad news if you were a customer. Your online telemedicine. That's definitely a thing, especially with the lockdown, right?
Yep.
Because hospitals can be very dangerous places in this day and age. And so, will you expect that if you're going to use telemedicine, that has some fantastic security, right? I mean, there are literal laws about that.
No. Babylon Health admits GP app suffered a data breach. Oh, no. This is in the UK. So they were accidentally showing other patients' documents and data.
Videos. Like you could go, you would consult with a doctor, and then because the doctor, you know, might have given you advice that you want to go back to and review, there was like a view your old videos section. You could review other people's videos.
I think they accidentally used like a small int for the user ID and it just rolled over.
I don't know what happened, but unfortunate.
Oops.
Unfortunate. They fixed it. And they claimed that it wasn't a hack. It, you know, there wasn't any, like, intrusion. It really was just incompetence.
But nice.
That amounts to the same thing if your neighbor is watching your, you know, your herpes, you know, diagnosis. It's embarrassing. Now, I never saw any of these used in any of the videos. Did you ever see any videos of them actually? I saw them carrying them.
No, I didn't see any of them used. But as I was thinking about, like, in what scenario would this be used, remember the Cuban, like, sound weapon that gave people brain damage? It was like, is that the same thing? Because those people bled from the ears.
I think that was different, but it might be the same technology. They use these on the pirates. So apparently this will like just make you like fall down and shit your pants. You know, it's just like
the brown note.
It just completely crippled you. And this is kind of a feel-good story. When you get to the end, it's like maybe not practical, but hey.
Audio engineers built a shield to deflect police sound cannons. It's just a piece of plywood with some foam and some other stuff on it. So
denim. It's made of denim.
So
also weighs 50 pounds.
Yeah, not convenient exactly.
If you want to build your shoulders while you're protesting, get yourself one of these. But yeah, they also very expensive.
Because of like, the denim.
He was like, well, you could drive them to the front line and then hand them out. I don't think they use the LRAD is the name of that, the sound cannon. I don't think they might have used them once or twice, but they weren't as widely used as, because they can mess you up.
Yeah.
They can really damage your hearing.
LRAD Hubbard.
They should, like, you know how they paint the stuff on the nose of planes? They should paint him on the, yeah, the sound cannon. This one, I don't, this seems like kind of a weird headline. I got to think this is going on every day of the week in 100 different ways, right? Yeah. I don't know why this, but hey, whatever.
Reuters reports that an obscure Indian cyber firm spied on politicians and investors worldwide. A little known Indian IT firm just spying on people. It's like, yep, Sumit Gupta, yeah, director of this cybersecurity firm. It's like, people hire them to spy on people. Okay.
That was just phishing campaigns. So you would choose an opponent and go to them and hire them, and they would embark on a phishing campaign and try to give you corporate espionage.
Okay.
Yeah, it's super common. He denies it, although the evidence seems overwhelming. Some more bad news for Intel, and this is another one of those, you know, academics and researchers exploits. So not as big a problem as you might think, but it is fun to explore them.
New Crosstalk attack impacts Intel's mobile, desktop, and server CPUs. Academics detail a new vulnerability named Crosstalk that may use delete data across Intel CPU cores. The most interesting thing about this is the Intel software guard, which has already been broken in two other ways. This is another effective technique for extracting information from software guard, SGX. They've apparently found a hidden staging buffer that was not documented before. And yeah, so that's where they're extracting the information. But they're able to use this technique to extract software guard extension keys. There's actually a couple other vulnerabilities that came out this week too. Like, you can use this kind of attack to basically do a denial of service attack for other processes on the same machine. So there was another vulnerability that came. So like, if you have one of the Amazon extra small instances, anybody else that's on that physical hardware, you can make it to where they only have about 6% of the available memory bandwidth from your extra small instance. So that's fun.
They have known about it for about a year. So the modern generation of Intel CPUs have already been fixed in hardware.
Yeah.
So it's just the older stuff.
They let Intel know 21 months ago. There is a microcode thing that's supposed to fix this, but it probably makes the performance garbage. We should test it.
Nintendo also had a little bit of a data leak in the past weeks, and people were a little bit outraged about it. And this week, Nintendo had some updates, which aren't going to make anybody feel any better.
Nintendo now says about 300,000 accounts were breached by hackers. So this is up from, I think the first number they reported was 80,000, and then the first time we covered it, it was like 120,000. So they're up to 300,000. So, yeah, Nintendo.
Ouch. And this is this was a very heavy leak too, like a lot of details. And the people affected had actually had stuff purchased on their account. So it wasn't just theoretical.
There were actually some messages on our forum where people were like, I called Nintendo support and they would not give me a refund because they said there was no way somebody else purchased on my account. It's like, well,
They might have changed their mind at this point. WhatsApp is certainly being used a lot because people are locked down, got to communicate, and it has a bunch of cool features when it comes to chatting and talking and, you know, doing everything in WhatsApp. But some of those features were poorly thought out in terms of their web presence.
WhatsApp is exposing users' phone numbers in Google search. So it fixed a flaw. The flaw in quotation marks there is they made a hyperlink that if you click the hyperlink, it would take you to the phone dialer application, which of course means that the hyperlink had to include your telephone number. Well, bad news, those pages weren't indexable by Google.
And there was no text file telling Google, don't index these.
Oops.
There is now. Don't worry. But it'll take some time.
I'm pretty sure that other search engines don't necessarily have to obey that. So how much of a fix is this really?
Yeah, really. I mean, you could run your own crawler and just point it at them, right?
Yeah.
I mean, terrible fix.
Not a fix at all, really.
And now you know exactly where to go for unlimited amounts of phone numbers. If you're a guy who's running a billion of them for, you know, health insurance fraud. Honda, it's been a while since we saw a really high-profile ransomware attack. But looks like poor Honda is the latest victim, and it really hit them hard.
Honda global operations halted by ransomware attack. So this, I think, originated in Japan, but this ransomware was so good that it had internal domain names in it. So, like, there are something.honda.com that's only accessible on the Honda internal network, and this ransomware was attacking those machines. So this shut everything down. They're probably going to pay the ransomware. I don't know. Maybe some more information is out by the time you're watching this, but Honda is so well-connected across the globe that it basically shut everything down.
It's the Snake ransomware, and they did say that they were fairly confident that they have not lost any data to exfiltration. They've only been encrypted. So what do you think that's going to cost them?
In the millions, probably.
At least. Our last story is another, researcher / academic, but it's really cool, and it's really disturbing because they could probably make it a lot better in the future. And that's when it gets terrifying.
Spies can eavesdrop by watching a light bulb's vibrations. The so-called lamp phone technique allows for real-time listening in on a room that's hundreds of feet away. So they're literally using a telescope to watch the filament inside an old-school incandescent light bulb vibrate.
No, I think it's the glass because it works on LED, too.
Oh, it does? Yeah. Okay.
Well, that's scary. I think they said LED was better.
Because of the variation in the light or whatever?
It's more, the vibrations affect it more, I guess.
I know that they've had this technique to do, like, glass panes, but I thought that was only good for, like, a mile.
They have to use lasers for that. Yeah. And it's not perfect, but they said they could tell, like, what music was playing, but they did play everything really loud. But again, it's only going to get better, right?
That's why a lot of embassies have double pane glass with like vacuum like on the inside.
So. Right, so yeah, LED bulbs are actually better.
Wow.
Better signal to noise ratio.
6.3 times that of an incandescent. That's crazy.
So future proof as well. Now there is one big caveat here. The only way they got it to work is if the bulb was suspended on a cord.
Yeah.
If it was mounted to a fixture, not so good. But it could get better.
Probably they could look at the light vibration or the light variation from any hard and reflective surface in the room.
Also, get a sneak and peek warrant. Go in there, loosen the bulb a little bit, get a little more play on it, and then set up your surveillance.
My favorite spy story was that there was this like wooden sculpture thing that was. Given from like it was from the school children of Russia to one of the I think Nixon, and they swept it for bugs and power sources and all that kind of stuff, because it was it was this wood carving that the school children of Russia made, and it was going to hang in the vice president's office or something like that, and they swept it for bugs and power sources and crap like that, and there was nothing detected, and they figured out later that yes, it was bugged, but it was powered by RF. So, like, when the spies wanted to listen in, they would drive up outside, and they would point at RF at a certain frequency at the office. There was a receiver inside the wooden sculpture that would pick up RF, convert that into electricity, and then turn on a microphone and send back the signal using the power from RF.
If you wanted to bug Trump, what, desk toy would you give him? What do you think would make him be like, oh, I need that?
Probably one of those like Twitter follower counter things.
I think the Secret Service might immediately suspect that.
All right, that's enough of that for today.
So tomorrow we'll have business and I think robot. Chris is not here, in case. Did we say that in the beginning?
Yeah, yeah. She's not feeling good. She won't be here tomorrow either.
So, see you then.